The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The agenda-filled crisis at Spurs continues as League Two Colchester United knock them out of the Carabao Cup on penalties. They're swiftly followed by West Ham, humbled at Oxford and Bournemouth at Burton. Five excellent designated penalty takers help Ole navigate Manchester United past a 16-year-old in a Rochdale kit, while Liverpool, City, Arsenal and Chelsea all have youth-filled fun as they progress. We've got the Scottish League Cup quarterfinals, news of just what football needs, another European competition. We'll look ahead to the Premier League this week, answer your questions. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, Marcus Bean, how are you?
Good, thanks.
You're back to school?
Yes, I am.
How's your becoming a chief executive of a football club course?
Different. Yeah, it's good. Good. A lot of very good cohort, some good people on it, and I'm enjoying it.
Has Ed Woodward done any lectures yet?
Not yet, no. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Paul McInnes.
Hi there,
nice
Mac.
To see you.
Nice to see you too.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm pleased about that. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
You had a dream about Jonathan Wilson last night.
Yeah, I did. Even when I'm asleep now, I can't escape him.
What was the dream?
Not a sex dream. I'd just like to state that straight off the bat. Mm-hmm. We were climbing a mountain attached to the same rope, and he was just whinging and whining about the weather and everything, and wouldn't shut up. And eventually I had to threaten to cut the rope because he was below me.
Oh, like touching the void. Have you seen that?
Would you
cut the rope of Jonathan Wilson if he was hanging over a crevasse?
It would depend on how annoying he was being.
Hang on a minute. I mean, surely you can interpret this dream. So you think that he is somehow dependent on you for his climbing up this mountain?
Well, no. Funnily you say that, actually, because when we were going somewhere recently on a train, Max was sitting beside Jonathan Wilson and trying to just annoy me by constantly... I was trying to read my book. He wouldn't leave me alone. But then he said, Jonathan, what is it you like most about Barry? And Wilson, without thinking about it, said, I like Barry because I don't see him as a threat. Which doesn't tally at all with your interpretation of my dream.
Do you still feel that way when I cut the rope on the mountain, mate?
And I can totally appreciate why he wouldn't see me as a threat, but it's just the fact that he didn't even have to think for a second. There was no hesitation. I don't see him as a threat.
All right, then, to the Carabao Cup third round. Tottenham Hotspur knocked out by Colchester United at the Western Homes Community Stadium on penalties. Spurs made 10 changes, but still a team full of internationals. They ended up with Eriksen's son, Lamela, Moura, Ali on the pitch. Eriksen and Moura missed penalties. We should firstly say well done, Colchester. Did you give them a chance, Marcus, in this one?
Yeah, I'm a great believer in if you make multiple changes, underestimate your opposition, which I think they kind of did. I think the level between some of the top teams and the lower ones is closing. That lack of cohesion, etc. I think Colchester took full advantage of that, was solid defensively, and deserved it, in my opinion.
Do you genuinely think that the level between... What do you mean the level between Spurs and League Two sides can't be closing, can it?
No, what I mean by that is if you change 8-9 players, I think that lack of cohesion... I know we all know that Son had some good players out there, but I just think that they lost that little bit of an edge. And I think there's only 3 or 4 teams, I'd say, in the country, if they change multiple players, I'm confident they're going to go and beat teams. Maybe not League Two, but League One and Championship, I think they're giving teams a chance.
And I suppose, I mean, you've been in dressing rooms, I guess, when you're playing big sides, right?
Yeah.
In games like this. If you see the team sheet and it's totally changed, you think, right, we've got a sniff here.
100%. I remember we played Spurs at their place. With Wickham.
Was that 5-4 or something?
Yeah, 4-3. And we saw the team sheet and we thought, gave us a little boost. We thought we had a chance. And I'm a great believer in it's important to have cohesion in your team. Whether you make a couple changes, okay. You make 5-6, it gives the other team a boost.
When you see that team sheet and there's loads of names maybe you don't recognise, is it a little bit of you slightly disappointed?
A tiny little bit. I think we still see it as a chance to have a giant killing, and we're still going to go down in the history books. So I think that's the most important thing. I think we're a little bit disappointment. Yeah.
We should point out in the shootout, the absolute highlight was Colchester United's Giovanni Brown trying a Panenka, and Gazzaniga, I mean, not even just catching it, just punching it with the disdain that it deserved. That was a joyous moment.
Well, I don't think you're quite doing it justice, because he dived, got back up and punched it with the contempt it deserved.
All right then, Paul. Pochettino afterwards saying, we need time again to build that togetherness that you need when you're competing at this level. When you have an unsettled squad, always it's difficult, you lose time. Then you need time to recover the time you lose. That's where we are. Maybe our performances are good. You need this extra, which is mental and a connection. It's energy to be all together, not to have different agendas in the squad.
Can't really stick that on a motivational poster, can you? It's about 3,000 words
in 12 dots.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting. I mean, I think you know, one of the things in comparison to you know, a lot of the top six sides, you know, they played youth at least three or four. Chelsea played made wholesale youth changes. The Spurs team is pretty experienced. I mean, it had Parrott up front and Tanganga and the defence, but otherwise, first team squad players. And that was almost the problem, as is being sort of interpreted now, is that he's got these players that he doesn't really want. He wished he'd left, Eriksen being the prime guy who was being hailed as the saviour of Spurs season 2 weeks ago, but, you know, that's showbiz. And they've now got this squad that isn't really motivated. Some players feel, oh, mate, you know, Harry Kane keeps speaking out saying, you know, we've got to stop. We've got to win stuff now. I think it's complicated, but I don't think Pochettino is entirely without responsibility in this. He's this season at the beginning. He in one of his press conferences, which I was at, he said, you know, this year we need to win a trophy. And it was quite striking, because in the past he's always written off the Carabao and the FA Cup. He says they're not as important as the Premier League and the Champions League. And so he can say that, but his players know that, you know, really he's not as bothered about those sorts of things. And it was a lethargic performance.
Barry, how big a crisis is this? I mean, Poch out was trending. I don't know if that's a... obviously, social media is social media. Spurs fans on there calling for Mourinho, a serial winner, to come in.
I don't know if Twitter Spurs is an accurate reflection of actual Spurs fans. You know, football fans on Twitter tend to try to outdo each other to show how much they care about the team that many of them have never seen play, and, you know, a lot of them are perhaps on different continents. So I don't know if that's an accurate barometer. I would, if I was a Tottenham fan who wanted Pochettino out, be careful what I wish for, because he's been a brilliant manager for them. The alternatives being named as potential replacements, Mourinho, who the hell wants that at their club? Max Allegri, you know, maybe. I do think there is an air of staleness around Tottenham. He's been there 6 years now. Maybe the players are getting bored. You know, I think as a manager, you have a certain shelf life. For as long as players, you know, that they listen to you before they start getting bored with the same old, same old. So either he needs to get new players in, which he clearly wants to do, and get rid of some of the deadwood who won't sign new contracts, but something needs to change there, I think. And this season, barring a very good FA Cup run, it's almost a write-off already.
I mean, people always talk about Sir Alex Ferguson changing his managerial, you know, the assistant managers. Spurs still have that little guy, don't they? And
Jesus Perez.
Yeah, I just wonder, do you think he needs to do something like that, Marcus? Or do you think, because we were saying before, look, had Aurier's goal been given, they'd be third in the Premier League, right? Mm. You need some perspective. It's not all right there, but still.
Yeah, no, I think Pochettino has alluded to himself. He needs to freshen things up, and I think the next two windows are going to be big for him. I think Spurs fans, as I agree with Barry, got to be careful what they wish for. I think Pochettino's excellent. I think now he needs just a little bit of a rebuild, a little bit of money. But it's very hard to motivate players when they feel undervalued or underpaid. And on top of that, they've not been allowed to leave. I think that is a very difficult task for a manager to deal with. And he's been hung out to dry a little bit because of that.
There's also an interesting dynamic, I guess, in the how Pochettino and Daniel Levy getting on, and particularly with the Christian Eriksen thing. If Christian Eriksen's going to be a problem for them this season because he doesn't want to be there and he's decided now he's going to run down his contract until he can leave on a free next summer, does the question become, should Levy have asked for less money last summer to move him on?
I've been in dressing rooms when players have tried to been in a similar situation as Eriksen, I think Alderweireld to a certain extent, and those players, you've almost lost them. The manager can't do anything to get them motivated. It's a really difficult situation, and as players, you kind of feel sorry for them as well because you feel like their career's been hampered, and no one really wants to see that.
So is this a gender thing that Pochettino is saying? Is that Eriksen? Is that what we presume?
I think it's Eriksen, Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen.
Danny Rose maybe as well?
Possibly Rose. But yeah, I suspect because they're not pulling in the same direction as he would like them to be. They don't want to be there.
It's interesting.
Just one before you continue. In a situation that you described there, Marcus, is it best then just to cut them off and send them to train on their own and more or less pretend they're not there?
A lot of managers do that. And I think we kind of saw maybe with Danny Rose especially, I think Pochettino did try to do that. But the problem is the squad's just not big enough to do that, and it's going to affect the performances on the pitch.
Yeah, and because he did it with Alderweireld as well. Exactly, they were both injured for a really long periods of time.
Yeah,
it was interesting. I was writing a column this week, and I thought I'd write about Spurs, and in the end, I ended up doing something self indulgent, about my school days. But I looked at Tottenham and said, look, 10 years ago they'd never been in the Champions League. Okay, 20 years ago they finished 10th, and their marquee signings in the summer were Chris Perry for $4 million and Øyvind Leonardsen for $3 million. So it is worth just having a... And I know that's a long time ago, right? And if you're 18 now, well, you start supporting at 10, you've always been there, where your expectations change. But yeah.
We're living in a different world now, aren't we? I mean, the Twitter support, whether they've ever been to see the team or not, in the flesh, they exist. And the TV audiences exist. And the thing is that Spurs have been playing stodgy football by and large, couple of amazing miracle nights excepted, since the turn of the year. So the sense of frustration is real.
Mm. Rory says, who's the most realistic best replacement for Eriksen at Spurs?
Haven't they bought him in Lo Celso?
Potentially. I mean, it's a different type of player, I think. And I'm going from a YouTube highlights reel that makes Lo Celso look better than Messi. But I think he runs with the ball more. I mean, the truth is, I guess, is that he is very hard to replace.
Yeah, and they've brought in Ndombele as well, who is, equally somebody who's good with a pass and an eye for goal. And maybe it's not the case of just replacing him one for one, but
Madison.
Grealish. They looked at Grealish before, and if he has a good season this season, I think he could be the one. I'm a big fan of his. Potentially.
Yeah, I mean, they're both two super players, aren't they? Right, let's move on to the Kassam Stadium. Oxford 4, West Ham 0. Finnegan says, after West Ham went from 2-0 winners over Manchester United to a 4-0 defeat to Oxford 3 days later, have you ever seen positivity evaporate so quickly from a football club? Paul McGuinness.
To be honest, I'm not sure. Manuel Pellegrini cares all that much about this cup. I think there's quite often there's a split, that... teams at the top play their kids. Teams in the middle sort of don't know where to go with it. But I think for most of those teams, they'd rather finish high in the league than get far in this competition.
Mm. I mean,
and that might not be the right strategy, but I think that is kind of where they are. And looking at the highlights of the West Ham performance, it was pretty limp. They didn't really appear to be fully pumped for it.
They didn't want it enough. No, they had a decent side out there, didn't they? Fornals played, Wilshere, Zabaleta, who must be 74, yeah. Diop, Valbuena, Snodgrass, Masuaku. That strategy, Marcus, is quite interesting, is it? Do you think these kind of mid-range Premier League sides, kind of, if they happen to get through and get to the quarterfinals, then they might start taking it seriously, and if they don't, well, they don't, it's all right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we've been seeing the last few years. They accept that there's a good chance if they might go out, if they get through, then so be it. It's not ideal for the competition, to be honest.
Well done to the goal scorers for Oxford United. Elliot Moore, Matty Taylor from close range. An hilarious slip from one of the West Ham defenders, letting Tariq Fosu, and then Shandon Baptiste with an absolutely brilliant finish. Burton 2, AFC Bournemouth 0. So that's last season's semi-finalists beating Bournemouth. He made 10 changes. Most fun here, Barry, was the floodlight failures, which meant there were 28 minutes of injury time. Classic cheers when the lights went off before the fans realised the lights have gone off. So the football's stopping. So
where was Moses when the lights went out?
In the dark.
Richard says, after the floodlight shenanigans at Burton, can the pod recommend alternatives to traditional floodlights?
Everyone hold their phone up.
Sort of Coldplay gig. Yeah. Would that be enough light?
At the Kosovo game the other week, there mm-hmm. was a sort of determined attempt by the Kosovans to get their lighters up. And they were roundly mocked by the England fans. Actually, kind of like was the biggest exchange of banter, because really it didn't do an awful lot at all.
Patrick says, with the Burton-Bournemouth game going to 28 minutes of added time, should they not have just played school playground style, next goal wins? It did bring back, you know, memories of playing football in the dark. Thinking, how dark does it have to be before you really can't see anything?
When you get the ball hit in your face.
Is that the exact
moment?
Yeah,
and then you go off and you cry to your dad that your cousin did it on purpose.
Oh, fair enough.
I think if it had stayed dark for another 2 or 3 minutes, the game would have been abandoned. So Bournemouth were possibly a little unlucky. But yeah, the lights went out 3 times.
I only heard the cheer for the first one. I don't know if, you know, by the third one, does it become a groan?
I can't remember, but I remember there was a game, I'm not sure who was playing, but Jimmy Bullard was involved and the lights went out and he picked up the ball and ran up the length of the field. And then when the lights came back on, he was standing on the opposition goal line with the ball at his foot.
I remember a game it must be 86, 87. We were Cambridge, a home to Halifax, and there was a bomb scare. And we must have gone off for about 40 minutes and came back on. I just remember getting back home incredibly late, but very excited that.
Well, Norwich had this one in the Christmas against what was then Frank Lampard's Derby County, when Norwich were 3-2 up with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And one of the floodlights failed. Frank Lampard was immediately with the referee, you know, maybe we should kind of come off the pitch at this point in time. Go off for half an hour, floodlight gets fixed, Derby win 4-3.
Were you gutted?
That's why, at the time I was, because it was, you know, it was in the middle of the season at a crucial point. But, you know, shows that sort of cunning that's going to mark out Frank as a future managerial great.
Well done to Burton. Well done to Crawley Town as well. Drew with Stoke, beat them on penalties. 2 points from 8 games in the championship for Stoke. They made 10 changes from their goalless draw at Brentford at the weekend. Sam Vokes, the only player to miss a penalty in the shootout. He took it first, hit the bar. Great to see a tiny home end being behind the goal, making a lot of noise. When you're in there, you think it's like the Nou Camp, and then you see a footage of it and it's like 6 rows deep. Do you think Nathan Jones regrets leaving Luton, Marcus?
I think it was an opportunity he couldn't turn down. I played against his Luton side. I think he's an excellent coach. They play a great brand of football, likes a diamond formation, and they can really play. And he's well respected in the game, but that job was a tough one, because just of the amount of how long they've had no success. I think that there's a mentality there that he needs to change, and it's difficult to do, and he's struggling.
Can it be as simple as, it doesn't mean you're not very good as a manager, right? If you go somewhere and it's bad, it doesn't mean you're a great manager if you go somewhere and it works out. That, can you almost write it off your CV? Because it's very much, if you have a failure, then... If you have a failure in the championship, then you're never going to get a job in the championship. You're going to have to go to League One, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have sort of short memories. No one's going to look at really what he did at Luton.
It's a tough one. I think as a manager, the most crucial thing is making sure when you go into a club that your ideas and philosophy kind of fit with the team. And he's kind of gone there, and I know he's getting very well paid and he's got a big budget, but you just question whether all things are aligned, and that's why he's struggling.
Yeah, I mean, the squad is just not built to play his kind of football.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a big rebuild, and I feel sorry for him because, yeah, I think he's got a lot to bring to the game.
All right, then, that'll do for part one. Part two will begin at Old Trafford, where Manchester United hammered Rochdale on penalties.
The way things are isn't the way they have to be.
But knowing what to challenge and how to change it isn't always clear.
That's why independent journalism has never mattered more.
When we are free to follow any lead
and question any authority,
we can confront the status quo,
uncover vital alternatives,
and bring clarity to the world's most complex issues.
We can help our readers understand the world.
So together we can fight for a better one. Hope is power.
And with your support,
you'll always find it
at The Guardian.
Welcome to part two of The Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Some live shows coming up on the 30th of October at the Science Museum. Football Weekly versus Science. Me, Barney, Nicky Bandini, you, Barry, plus some sciencey guests. I saw yesterday you sent a tweet to Greta Thunberg.
Yes.
Has she responded?
Funnily enough, no. Oh. But I just think we need someone of her, well, with her skill set to help us against the scientists. Mm. So if you can, I don't know, arrange the paperwork, we can play her under a different name and no one will notice.
As Barney said in a tweet, puts his head in the dressing room and said, lads, it's science, we've got this. But anyway, the scientists will no doubt humiliate us. That's October the 30th. December the 20th, we're back in Leeds. Me, Lars, and two others at the Belgrave Music Hall. And on January the 27th, me and you, Barry, plus two more at the Liberty Hall in Dublin. Please come to all of those shows. Right, Manchester United won, Rochdale won. Manchester United needed penalties to get past them. Paul Pogba had a great chance. Wan-Bissaka had to clear one off the line, though, from one Rochdale attack. I guess the one positive for Manchester United is Mason Greenwood, who scored another. An amazing moment for 16-year-old Luke Matheson. Picked up his GCSE results last month, is now doing his A-levels, sent the 6,000 travelling Rochdale fans completely wild. Who's in the bigger crisis, Paul? Solskjaer or Poch?
Solskjaer, by a long way. If for no other reason that Pochettino has a degree of control over what he's doing, I'm not sure that Ole does. I respect him and I wanted him to succeed. And when the bad run started, I kind of thought people were quite quick to jump on him. I thought at the weekend they looked like a rag bag of players. They just didn't look to have any shape or cohesion, never mind impetus and, you know, the right attitude. I think it's probably game over for him. I'm not sure the players are buying into it enough, or if there's even enough to buy into. But even that aside, you've got this club that's just run in this way where they are not up to date. They don't understand. They're fine on the commercial side, they're still growing their revenue, but they don't understand how to recruit, how to build a club, how to create legacy. You know, if you compare what the Ed Woodward conference call to an appearance at the World Football Summit by the Liverpool chairman, where he's talking about how they structure the club, how they bring in subject experts in every single field who answer to this, to the general, the sort of equivalent of the general manager, Edwards. And then you've got Klopp, whose domain is the, and it's all joined up. United aren't that.
But how can they not? I mean, it's been long enough now. They should be, right? They've got the revenue, they've got the money.
Well, I'm not sure how interested the owners are. And I'm not sure how, yeah, I've never met Woodward, but he doesn't come across as, he could have done it by now if he wanted to, you know. It strikes me as being, that's the problem right there. And, you know, they need a technical director, but they've been talking about it for a long time. And I think one of the things is, if they bring in a technical director, how much control is that person going to have? And I think that's maybe where the problem lies, is like, who's going to give up power in order to change the structure of the club?
What do you think, if they just carry on like this, where would they finish, and what implication could that have?
I think that they're probably sixth is a fair reflection of the squad that Solskjaer's got to work with. I think bringing in another manager won't change that. I think that he's the tools that he's got to work with just aren't good enough. And whether that's his fault, Ed Woodward's fault, we don't know. But for sure, there needs to be structural changes at Man United, and Woodward needs to release some of the control.
The minute the problem appears to be they don't have a striker who's, you know, reliable for 20 goals a season, but I think they just sold one for 75 million in the summer who was pretty reliable for that, and they don't have a midfield that's that can progress up and down up the pitch enough. But you know, they spent £50 million on Fred last summer with I think the aim of being able to do that, so you know, there's no
attack midfield.
And you know, you would say he would say that you know, he's got a centre half pairing that he wants to work with now, and Lindelof and Maguire, and they bought Bissaka at, and they've got Shaw at left back, and they've obviously got, you know, one of the best goalkeepers in the world going on his form of 2 or 3 years ago. But so you know, it's like you want these four players, but can you be guaranteed that they're going to buy the right ones? I mean, I think that's just to clarify, though. I think I said earlier that it was the Liverpool chairman, it was the Liverpool CEO, Peter Moore, who gave this presentation, which is worth looking at if you're not a Liverpool fan.
If I could just briefly go back to Rochdale, I was incredibly impressed with the way Luke Matheson spoke after the game. Like, for a 16-year-old, he displayed unbelievable maturity. And his manager, Brian Barry Murphy, he's from Cork. He's the son of a very famous hurling and Gaelic football player and manager, Jimmy Barry Murphy, who anyone with a passing interest in GAA will have heard of. But I had no idea he was manager of Rochdale. But he too spoke incredibly well, talking about how mature and level-headed Matheson is, and just how much an occasion like this means to the fans of a team like Rochdale.
Oh, that emotion when he scored, I mean, not only just for him, but for the fans as well. You know, as long as if you're a lower league fan, if you score a goal at a time when the game matters, so we'll get on to Chelsea in a bit, the fact that Grimsby made it 2-1 and scored a great goal is almost enough for them to leave that stadium going, they had the moment.
You see it in the Rugby World Cup, when a team of minnows are taken on, you know, a team basically they've no real business being even on the same pitch as, and just to get a try, you know, that's made it worthwhile for them to turn up and to, you know, they know they're not going to win, but even if they just get a try or two, they are happy, and you know, they've put a lot of work in to get that try. And in the Rugby World Cup as well, there's been a lot of controversy over refereeing, a lot of decisions going against these smaller teams, which you think, God almighty, it's hard enough for them as it is without officialdom conspiring against them.
Although this is from Gary, who says, with the spotlight on Luke Matheson, should an age limit be put on footballers to stop us feeling old?
Well, I was 30 when Luke Matheson was born. That is just beyond depressing.
Speaking of age, Marcus, shame on you. Arsene Wenger is only 69. So you've written him off before his time. And an interesting tweet from 2013 from Manchester United's account. David Moyes says Manchester United must improve in a number of areas, including passing, creating chances and defending. Those 6 years have gone well, haven't they? Portsmouth 0, Southampton 4. Producer Jonathan notes are as follows. Danny Ings had a good night. Idiot punched a horse. And that pretty much sums it up. It is worth noting that Pompey had great chances at 0-0 and 1-0. And there was some debate about whether this game, you know, is a big enough derby or not. Isn't the point that if it's your derby, it's bloody big for you and that's all that really matters?
I think it really matters to the people involved, yeah.
And so Southampton will be happy. Danny Ings had a good night. Marcus, he's a decent footballer, isn't he? And you sort of think if he gets a run, Southampton are always looking for that guy. It's, you know, Charlie Austin, if he gets a run. Danny Ings, if he gets Shane Long, not so much, but you know, one of them gets a run in the side and might score a lot of goals.
Yeah, as a Liverpool fan, I was excited when we signed Danny Ings. I like him as a forward. Unfortunately, injuries played a part of him not being the player that he could have potentially been at Liverpool. So I think he's full of energy. He knows where the goal is. And as you said, I think Southampton have got a good player on their hands there.
Regarding the idiot who punched the horse, interestingly or not, it only became a specific offence to attack a police dog or horse or a prison warden's dog in April of this year. So
is that so?
Yeah. I would have thought they would have much the same rights as actual police officers, but no. So the say if it had happened before April, the guy who did it would justifiably be able to claim self-defence. But now this makes it a lot more difficult.
Well, we all remember the Newcastle fan in 2013 who punched a horse. This time, a 52-year-old man arrested on suspicion of animal cruelty and attempted criminal damage. He was released from custody on Wednesday. He remains under investigation. Police say the horse was not injured and remained on duty. So Man City won 3-0 at Preston North End. Interesting selection from Pep. Took it pretty seriously up front with Sterling, Silva, Jesus, Bernardo, Gundogan starting. Back four very different. Cancelo, Harwood, Bellis, Garcia and Angelino. Phil Foden got some minutes as well. City playing in that kit that looks like a rocket ice lolly. Sort of bright yellow fading into orange as it goes down towards the lollipop stick, which are the legs of the player. In slightly more serious news, I don't know what everyone made of Pep Guardiola's response to the Bernardo Silva tweet that we mentioned on Monday, comparing a picture of a young Benjamin Mendy to a caricature of a black person. It's been criticised by Kick It Out. Pep saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but they should put the focus on other issues because they don't know which guy you are talking about. Bernardo is one of the most lovely people I've ever met in my life. He speaks four or five languages. That's the best way to understand how open-minded he is. And one of his best friends is Mendy. He's like a brother for him. The image for the two is not about the colour of the skin. He took a picture of Benjamin when he was young and he related it to this cartoon, which was quite similar for the image. He carries on. There are many situations with people, with white people, and you look at a cartoon and the face is quite similar as your face. You put it in there. It's quite similar. I think the response from Mendy was clear after that. They're joking all the time. Maybe it is what I said many times, and my advice is not to use social media too much. If something happens, it will be a mistake because Bernardo is an exceptional person. You can send a racist image without being a racist. And Pep is wide of the mark here because once it goes into the public sphere, it's in the public sphere. Is that correct?
I think so. I don't think there was any malice intended whatsoever. But what he posting the image on social media and the connotations of the cartoon involved, it wasn't advisable. And I think he just needs sort of to be educated as to why. And see also Pep, who clearly doesn't quite get it.
Mm. John Barnes is very articulate on matters of race. And I've, Marcus, always just sort of been minded to agree with him because of obviously everything that he has been through in his career. But he seems to excuse this. And obviously he has much more experience of it than I do. So it that confuses me because I don't agree with John Barnes, but I don't know if I'm right to disagree with John Barnes.
It's a tough one. John Barnes has kind of been rolled out as the go-to man on anything to do with race at the moment. He's always in the media. And initially, I thought he had some good points when he first came on the scene. Now it's kind of got to the stage where he doesn't speak for the larger community as a whole. People I speak to, black players in the game, we speak constantly on WhatsApp. And we're not... We understand as players, dressing room banter and what's said in private, fair enough. But as soon as you put it in the public domain, it's unacceptable. There's going to be people that don't know Bernardo Silva and Mendy's, relationship, and they're going to be offended by this. It's unacceptable to put it out there. Bernardo Silva needs educating on it. As simple as that.
John Barnes said, look, he was talking to Sky Sports, there's nothing wrong with it, it's ridiculous, it's a cartoon, and in many respects I've seen it. I think it looks like a young Mendy. I don't see what the issue is. This has got nothing to do with racism, they're friends, regardless of whether it looks like Mendy or not. Why is that offensive? Are Kick It Out and the FA wrong? Yes. Barnes says, showing a caricature of a little black boy and a real black boy. How is that racial stereotyping? He did not show the cartoon. All he did was put up two pictures.
One, it wasn't a little. It wasn't a black boy. That was a cartoon picture of like kind of a throwback to a colonial kind of image, right? It wasn't a cartoon picture of a black boy. So I don't know what he's talking about there. For a lot of people, that's going to throw up emotions of the colonial past and racism, etc. Me being in the game, understanding dressing room banter, it didn't for me. But I've knew straight away that he's going to be in trouble, and for he needs. Address for me an FA ban of some sort and an education program. It's not because I think he's racist. It's just because we can't be condoning that sort of behaviour. We get upset when we see other people do it, so we can't do it ourselves. It's as simple as that. I have maybe in the past had relationships where with other players where they could say certain things to me, but as soon as they put it out in the public domain, I'm like, listen, man, I can't defend you, mate. It's as simple as that. It's not rocket science. I don't understand why people are making it more difficult than it is.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. And I think, you know, I think two points I want to make, because I'm a white guy. He's never experienced any prejudice in his life. So I think football, generally, professional football is one of the best examples we have in our culture of multiracial society, for want of a better word, of people of all races, colours, creeds coming together and showing they're all equal. So, I like that. I want that to continue. I think there is obviously an element of education here about what you do in public and what you do in private. For me, that's secondary. I think that needs to happen, but I don't think that is the cause of the prejudice. But I do think that this cartoon is, I think it's of a Spanish sweets brand or something like that. You know, these do tap into colonial and racist histories, which have not been dealt with properly. You know, it's the same in our country. We have, you know, rows about our empire and Winston Churchill and Rhodes. That Cecil Rhodes and the Rhodes Must Fall campaign, we don't face up to those things. And I have to say, from my experience of Spain and the rest of Europe, they're not any better than us in that regard. So I think that there needs to be a reckoning with that past before you can say, oh, all those associations no longer mean anything, you know?
Back on the pitch, wins for young sides fielded by Liverpool, Arsenal and Chelsea.
I'm just interested what people think about Chelsea and Arsenal right now, because they're teams who can... I mean, Chelsea have had three good results and then a bad European result in the middle of that. Arsenal have had some topsy-turvy league performances but play well away in Europe, and then... Marcus, what's your state on your opinion on where the state of their squad? Are they about to click in, or is it sort of a flash in the pan?
I think they're just both in the rebuilding stage. I think they're a long way off Man City and Liverpool, as the points total showed last season. And again, similar to Man United, I think they need three or four starters, world-class players to try and challenge those two. But if they don't, then they're going to be stuck in the same position they have been.
But there is, you know, the excitement is youth, right? Everyone loves young players. And you look at Martinelli, he's got a great header, beautiful one at the top corner for Arsenal. You know, Joe Willock, Reece Nelson.
Sarko.
And Tierney and Bellerin both getting on the pitch as well. And Chelsea as well. Look, Reece James scoring from 25 yards. Hudson-Odoi getting back on the pitch and back on the score sheet. More youngsters. A guy called Billy Gilmore, who sounds very Roy of the Rovers, doesn't he, that Lampard was extolling the virtues of afterwards.
And Cesc Fabregas as well, who apparently rates him.
Really?
Does a similar job, yeah.
You can read a lot into one result, but I see where you're getting at, Paul, that those two sides sort of...
I kind of, at the beginning of the season, confess, I put Man United as being most likely fourth place. I thought Chelsea could finish outside the top six because transfer ban, new coach, blah, blah, transition to... And I've watched them play bad games, but I've also watched them play really good stuff. And there is something about, you know, going back to what we're saying about Spurs, when you change, when you bring in just a change of personnel, then you can create a whole new atmosphere. And, you know, watching Arsenal fans who moan so much, you know, really enjoying this Carabao Cup victory because it involved young Zlatan players, I wonder, about, can that actually, or will the Socrates, Luiz, ponderous axis that we saw at the weekend ultimately kind of be more relevant?
Sure, I was going to say, you know, it was only 3 days ago that Nick Ames, who's been to, I think, the last five Arsenal games, just says it is chaos.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
You know, who knows where it will end, but nice to be positive, you know, for a day or two at least. Liverpool as well, 1-2-0 at MK Dons. I mean, MK Dons had a couple of big chances. Conor McGrandles, quite a farmery name, isn't it? He volleyed one over. Jordan Bowery hit the post at 1-0 as well. But Liverpool had a very young side, four teenagers, even though it was James Milner, the oldest man on the pitch, who scored the opener. Total ricket from the goalkeeper. A guy called Kijana Hoover scored a great header for 2-0. Naby Keita made his first start as well since the Community Shield. Back to...
And Harvey Elliott, youngest ever player for Liverpool in a competitive fixture.
Right, let's round up the other Carabao Cup games. Sunderland won at Sheffield United. Barry, Max Power with the only goal. Absolute rocket from the edge of the box from Max Power.
Yeah, rocket into the top corner from about 25 metres. Max Power, obviously, another Roy the Roverish name. Sunderland have got a way to Oxford in the next round. I think I'd rather they'd be knocked out, to be honest. There you go.
Have you got metric, Barry?
I did just there. Yeah. As soon as I said it, I went, I never do that.
I'd have you down as an imperial.
I normally am, but yeah, I just went brief flirtation with the metric system, which I didn't enjoy, and I'll be going back to imperialist system as soon as possible. But yeah, I think I'd have preferred Sunderland be knocked out, but
just, you know, beating a Premier League side. I know when you look at Sheffield United, Sunderland, you don't go...
Well, it was Sheffield United reserves. I'd say they couldn't care less whether they lost or not.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, for that level of Premier League side, it is actually, we don't need this game, do we? Leicester won 4-0 at Luton. James Justin with one of the goals. He'd only just signed from Luton in the summer. Didn't really celebrate, sort of acknowledged that he'd scored. Mark Langdon, friend of the pod, sings his praises very highly. Watford beat Swansea 2-1. Danny Welbeck's first goal for a year. Well done, Danny. Dominic Calvert-Lewin got two as Everton won 2-0 at Sheffield Wednesday. And Villa won 3-1 at Brighton. Nice goals from Villa. A proper half volley from Jack Grealish. Wolves needed penalties to get past Reading. John Ruddy saved one of the penalties. Another Reading penalty looked like it went into the second tier. In the draw, five all Premier League ties. Two all Football League ties and Burton Leicester. So you've got Villa, Wolves, Chelsea, Manchester United, Everton, Watford, Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City, Southampton, Crawley, Colchester, Oxford, Sunderland and Burton Leicester. Give us a winner out of those, Marcus, that isn't Manchester City.
Liverpool.
Paul, give us a winner that isn't Man City or Liverpool.
Well, go Arsenal.
Barry, give us a winner that isn't Arsenal, Man City or Liverpool.
Actually, sorry, can I change for Chelsea?
No, it's too late.
I've got to go Villa.
Okay, Villa. Well done to Aston Villa for winning the Carabao Cup. To Fitbar, the Scottish League Cup quarterfinals. Celtic beat Partick Thistle 5-0. Rangers won 1-0 at Livingston. They'll both be joined in the semi-finals by Hearts and Hibs, who needed penalties. Hibs after a goalless draw at Kilmarnock, and Hearts after drawing 2-2 at home to Aberdeen. And the old firm have been kept apart, as have the Edinburgh sides, as you can imagine. Hibs versus Celtic, Rangers versus Hearts. To the FIFA Best Awards, well done to a player called Lionel Messi, who got the best award for the men's. The big story about that was that he voted for Ronaldo, but Ronaldo didn't vote for him. Does this tell? And people saying, this tells you all you need to know about Messi and Ronaldo. Does it tell us all we need to know?
I looked at their voting history, and Ronaldo's never voted for Messi, but Messi's voted for Ronaldo twice in the last 2 years. So Messi's not completely without, you know, blame.
Lionel Messi's just, he's finally chilling out a bit. I mean, he's won so many that he can be now. Do you think he's either he's changed as a human, Messi, or he's just gone? He's doing it for PR reasons now, do you think?
Well, he probably knows by now that he actually is the GOAT. So you can do the confidence, the magnanimous gesture to your rival.
Yeah.
So you're saying he's patronising Ronaldo now?
I wouldn't say that. No, I would say he probably does. But you know, if you're eaten up by the rivalry, then it's less likely.
Both of them need to have a long, hard look at themselves. How can you not vote for Messi or Ronaldo as the best footballer in the world for any of the last 10 years? I mean, it's ridiculous.
It seems like it's just a different mentality. These guys are just, their mentality and their will to be the best is just unique. And I think that's what it comes down to. I can't personally fathom that if I was one of those two, I wouldn't vote for the other one. But these guys, their mentality is on a different level to anyone.
And that
else.
Is slightly different to the PFA Awards, which you get that piece of paper sent to you in like February, right? Mm-hmm. And I've heard players saying, oh, I just copy whoever's next to me. Do you give it a long, hard think, or do you just go, I can't give any left midfielders in League Two?
I'd give it a reasonable go, to be fair. But you're right, there are a lot that just copy each other.
Define reasonable go.
I find a little space on my own and I concentrate.
Okay. Do you do any Googling?
No.
No, okay. No. So like, reasonable go, how many minutes, how long are you spending over this?
15 minutes.
Okay, no, that's not bad. It's not more bad than a minute a player. Yeah, so exactly. That's fine. Yeah. Megan Rapinoe won the women's player. She did a great speech, actually, which you almost certainly have seen, about footballers using their platforms to speak up for minorities. As you can imagine, it's split the audiences on social media between angry old white men and everyone else. Alisson won best men's goalkeeper, but didn't know he'd won it, or there was a huge pause because he didn't understand the English, I think. So Ruud Gullit said, you've got to speak in Brazilian to get Alisson out.
Portuguese.
Well, I know, that's the whole point, Ruud Gullit. That's okay. Best FIFA Women's Goalkeeper of the Year, Sari van Veenendaal of Holland. Jurgen Klopp won Best Men's Coach. Jill Ellis, Women's Coach. Leeds won the Fair Play Award, which is great, for the incident where they let Aston Villa score after Mateusz Klich scored with a Villa player down injured.
Not for the instance where they did loads of spying on Derby County and still managed to lose them in the playoffs.
Not the Spygate. If you remember, Pontus Janssen tried to stop Villa scoring, so he doesn't get his little bit of the fair play. They chink off a tiny bit. Perhaps that's why they sold him. And the Puskas Award was Daniel Zuri for De Brecken against Ferencvaros. He's 18. He was making his senior debut at home. He came on in the 81st minute with De Brecken 1-0 down, scored the winner in the 93rd with that overhead kick. It is a brilliant goal. That remains the only goal he scored in senior league football so far. Should he retire?
No, but he shouldn't score any more goals.
Okay.
Just have that one.
Should Luke Matheson retire?
No. Well, Luke Matheson should not retire, no, because his team didn't win. Although he does seem, I heard his GCSE results, he seems a very bright young man.
Okay. The World 11, Alisson, Ramos, Van Dijk, De Ligt, Marcelo. It's not very balanced, that, is it? Modric, De Jong, Hazard, Mbappe, Ronaldo, Messi. Lots of Liverpool fans upset that Robertson and Alexander-Arnold didn't make it. Are they right to be sad? You're a Liverpool fan, aren't you, Mark? Yeah. Were you tweeting angrily at FIFA?
No tweets, but there seems to be quite a lot of Real Madrid players in there for some unknown reason.
It's true. I mean, they're quite good, aren't they?
They are, but they've been poor, haven't they, for a little while.
No, very good point. The Women's England squad has been announced. Jordan Nobbs is back in for the friendlies against Brazil and Portugal after returning from a serious knee injury that kept her out of the World Cup. Manchester City have made it through to the next round of the Women's Champions League. They beat Lugano 4-0 last night, 11-1 on aggregate. Hibs lost 5-1 to Slavia Prague, going out 9-2 on aggregate. Arsenal's women have their second leg against Fiorentina tonight. They're 4-0 up from the first leg. And Glasgow City play Chertanovo with a 1-0 advantage. That's it for part two. We'll begin part three with an important and pretty devastating story from Iran and the rights of women to watch football there. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Now, you may have seen the devastating story last week from Iran after a woman died after setting herself on fire outside of a courtroom where she was being prosecuted for her attempt to enter a football stadium disguised as a man. Since the Iranian Revolution in 1979, women have been banned from entering football stadiums. There have been protests ever since, with calls to allow women back into stadiums growing stronger in recent years. Last week, it was announced by FIFA that they'd send a delegation to Iran to meet the Deputy Minister of Sport and Youth to discuss this issue, amongst other things. We're joined on the phone by Mariam Shojaei, an Iranian activist who's been fighting for a long time to get women into football stadiums in Iran and whose brother is the captain of the Iranian national team. Mariam, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm good. Thank you so much.
Tell us a little bit about the campaigning you do in and outside of Iran.
Yes, I've started this campaign 5 years ago. And the main reason was to fight this ban so that Iranian women would be able to go to stadium watching games.
Your brother, Masoud, is the captain of the national side, but you've never, ever been able to see him inside Iran, have you?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, he's been playing an Iranian national team for almost 13 years, but I never had a chance to watch him playing inside the country.
How does that make you feel?
I mean, it's not only, it's not about me, because there are so many millions of women, Iranian women inside, who are more eager, who are more football fan than I am, and I have this opportunity to travel around the world and watch the game, our national team outside of the country, but that's not the case for them.
There was this case I mentioned at the top a couple of weeks ago, the woman whose nickname is Blue Girl, after the colours of the Iranian side she was a fan of. Listeners may have already heard of this story. She took her own life outside a courthouse. Can you tell us exactly what happened and why?
Yes, her real name is Sahar Khodayari. She was 28. She was a fan of one of the most important, like famous team in Iran, Estelal. So she disguised as man. She tried to attend the stadium, but the security guard recognized her. And she was arrested, and she was in a prison for 2-3 days, and she was released on bail. And the day that she went back to the court, and she figured out that actually that wasn't official. Somebody there told her that she was sentenced to 6 months in jail. It wasn't a trial. She just heard that from somebody in there, from one of the authorities. And she was, at the same time, she was suffering from depression. So when she was out of the court, she set herself on fire and, you know, the rest of the story.
What's the reaction been to that story?
We have received so many international, and of course, within the country, we've received so many attention for this issue. It was very heartbreaking. And actually, I was surprised by the attention that this issue has received. I was very emotional, but I thought that was something personal for me, since I've been working on this campaign for a long time. But as I said, I was so surprised by the attention that everybody was very sympathetic about what happened to her.
One of the things announced last week is that on the 10th of October, women will be allowed into the match between Iran and Cambodia in the Azadi Stadium in Tehran. Is this a big step for you?
Oh, of course, yes. And this is that something that they announced it 2 months ago, because I wrote so many letters to FIFA, and I was informed that the Iranian Federation said that for the match 10th of October in Tehran, they allow a woman to go to a stadium. But what we want is a permanent solution for all the games, not only national team, but also for all the games, the leagues, Iranian leagues inside, and for every stadium around the country.
How do you think FIFA have dealt with this issue so far? You say you've written lots and lots of letters to them. Have you found them to be receptive?
I wish that FIFA took action earlier. So because it has been many years that we demand this, we ask FIFA to take action, and we wish that they acted earlier on this issue. But for what they are doing now, we are grateful, because hopefully, by putting pressure on the federation, this problem is going to be solved.
I was just wondering, during the course of your campaigning, has your own safety been compromised in any way?
Actually, I wasn't that concerned about it so far. But after the death of Blücher, I had so many interviews, and now I'm a bit concerned. So I'm out of the country, and I was planning to go back by middle of September. But I'm outside, so I don't have, I'm a bit concerned, as I said. I'm not going back to Iran at this point because it would be risky for me.
And what about your brother?
We have a different path. So because he was very concerned about this issue himself, he wanted this issue to be solved, but he always believed that this was something that it has to be fixed within the country, so that he even asked the president to solve this issue after Iran was qualified for World Cup 2018. So, but what I do is completely separate from my activities has nothing to do with him.
Finally, Marianne, what do you think the future holds for your campaign and for the rights of women to watch football in Iranian stadiums?
I'm very optimistic. First of all, I'm very grateful for what happened, for the all the reform, for reforms happened in FIFA during the past couple of years. So I'm very optimistic that this issue is going to be solved permanently.
Listen, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, Mariam.
Thank you.
Mariam Shojahi there, an Iranian activist fighting for a long time to get women into football matches in Iran. Back to the football last night. La Liga wins for Barcelona and both the Madrid sides. Real have gone top with a 2-0 win over Osasuna. Barcelona bounced back from their defeat at the weekend to beat Villarreal 2-1. Arthur scoring an absolute thunderbolt. Messi on his first start of the season forced off at half-time with a thigh problem. In Italy, Inter stay top, beating Lazio 1-0. Juventus 2 points behind them. They won at Brescia. Napoli fell to a shock defeat at home to Calgary. Calgary had 5 shots all game. Napoli had 30, but they still lost 1-0. And Chris Smalling made his Roma debut. Roma were 5 games unbeaten. Smalling came in and they lost 2-0 at home to Atalanta. In Ligue 1, Adam says, can we pronounce Reims correctly today? It's Reims, except the I is the same nasal vowel as the first syllable of Guingamp. Try it, you'll like it. Okay then. So in Ligue 1, big shock at the top. PSG lost 2-0 at home to Reims, who scored a goal in each half. Angers have moved level at the top with PSG. They're both on 15 points. They won 2-0 at Toulouse. And Monaco picked up their first win of the season, scoring 2 late goals to beat Nice 3-1. Dijon now the only team in Ligue 1 without a win this season. They held Marseille to a goalless draw. Premier League games, everybody, this weekend. It's the one we're most looking forward to, Monday Night Football, Manchester United versus Arsenal, which, of course, we'll touch on Monday, but it's part of the weekend schedule. That looks like it's an interesting one, given the optimism now that Arsenal suddenly have, and probably every game that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be involved in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think also Sheffield United-Liverpool kicking off the weekend. I mean, Sheffield United had a fantastic start to the season. And we'll be absolutely relishing having a go at Liverpool, because, you know, free pass. Doesn't really matter if they win or not. Ground will be right behind them. I think it'll be a really interesting game.
Spurs-Southampton, Marcus. If that doesn't go Spurs' way, then you know, we can add another. I don't know what the crisis levels go to, what level we're on. Amber alert, are we, for Pochettino? Should we go to silver? Is that silver higher than amber? Presumably red.
Well, I'd have gone on the amp scale of 1 to 11.
Okay. What are we on at the moment for Poch?
I'd say 7.
And for Solskjaer?
7.
Okay. Bournemouth play West Ham, Villa Burnley, Chelsea v Brighton, Palace, Norwich, Wolves, Watford. The late kickoff is Everton versus Man City. Could you see Everton doing anything, Paul, against Man City? They're a weird side, Everton.
Yeah, they are. They are a weird side, and you know the big questions over where they get their goals from regularly. Obviously, it was Calvert-Lewin plays is underrated. Plays an important role for that team, does a lot of stuff, knitting things together when he's not in the team at the minute, with Moise Kean sort of finding his feet there. They miss him, but he doesn't score that many goals. So for him, getting a brace against Sheffield Wednesday might help. But if you're not going to offer much of a goal threat against Manchester City, they're gonna score some goals against you. So, I just think that was the biggest statement in modern times of last weekend, with, you know, Pep going, all right, we lost one game, this is what we do to the opposition in the following match.
The Jose Perez derby is on Sunday, Leicester City versus Newcastle United. In other news, Tom Lawrence and Mason Bennett, both derby players, have been charged with drink driving after a collision between their cars on Tuesday night just before midnight. They were arrested at the scene, charged the next day. Lawrence was taken to hospital as a precaution after his Range Rover was stopped by a lamppost. They'll both appear in court next month. Derby have just released a statement on their website, which says the following. It's quite long, but it's worth following. As a club, we cannot and do not condone the actions of a small group of players on Tuesday evening. The players were out as part of a scheduled team-building dinner with staff, and while the majority of them acted responsibly and left at around 8 p.m. and were not involved, a small group, including the team captain, Richard Keogh, continued drinking into the night. They should have known when to stop and also ignored the opportunity to be driven home using cars laid on by the club and chose to stay out. As a result of an alcohol-related incident, Richard Keogh has sustained a serious knee injury that will prevent him playing until the end of the season. The players involved in the incident on Tuesday evening will be subject to a rigorous internal investigation under the club's code of conduct and disciplinary procedures, but over and above any punishment they receive, we will be expecting them to become involved with the excellent work the Community Trust does, helping the communities we serve. We have been very clear about our attitude towards alcohol, and the players know that at certain and specific times of the season, they are permitted a drink together as a group in a controlled environment. Those involved in Tuesday's incident know they will pay a heavy price for their actions, but also we will support them with their rehabilitation back into the squad and the team. We fully support the work of our partners at DrinkAware, and the unsanctioned actions of this small group of players is totally at odds to the stance that both DrinkAware and Derby County Football Club take regards alcohol. We will be using this situation to redouble our efforts in highlighting the dangers posed by alcohol. We'd also like to thank the emergency services for their swift help. I mean, first of all, Barry, we've spoken about drink driving on this podcast before. Absolutely no sympathy for anyone who's doing that.
I know someone close to me was involved in an accident where they hit and killed a pedestrian. They weren't speeding, they weren't drunk, it was just an accident. But if they have said, you know, if I had failed a breath test after that, if I had been drinking, I just wouldn't be able to live with the guilt. And drink driving is something I personally have never, ever done and never will. There's a court case imminent, so kind of limited in what we can say, but Derby have clearly made it abundantly clear, you know, that what has happened here. And
sure. And I mean, it's not necessarily, oh, and their season hasn't started well, but if you're Philip Cocu and your captain is part of this, I mean, you will just be incandescent with rage.
Probably.
Like, I'm not, you know, look, am I massively shocked that footballers are doing it?
Well, I think it's probably unfair to tag it on foot. Lots of people drink and drive.
Sure, sure.
But these guys, their every need is catered for. You know, it's said in the statement that there was cars laid on for them. It's not like they even had to spring for an Uber or get a taxi or whatever. And still they do it. I hope they get punished. They probably will get punished by the law and by the club, and I have zero sympathy for them.
And out for the whole season, Richard Keogh?
Well, I'd say that's kind of irrelevant, to be honest. Nobody got seriously hurt, either them or, you know, any innocent bystanders, pedestrians, other motorists, and that I'd say is the main thing. It's hard to talk about something like this without sounding incredibly sanctimonious, but it is pretty dumb, isn't it?
I think you probably can be sanctimonious about it a little bit. Anyway, elsewhere, Wimbledon have suspended manager Wally Downes after he was charged by the FA over an alleged breach of their betting rules. The FA alleged Downes placed 8 bets on football matches between 2013 and 2019. Wimbledon said in a statement, given the seriousness of this breach in FA regulations, the club has decided to suspend Wally with an immediate effect, giving time for the club and the Don's Trust boards to look at the allegations more closely and make a further announcement in due course. Saturday's game against Peterborough will be managed by Glyn Hodges, his assistant. Barry, great news for football fans, isn't it? UEFA have come up with a new competition called the Europa Conference. I am buzzing.
Yeah, the Europa Conference League.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Which would be a third tier European competition, so Champions League, Europa League, Europa Conference League. Obviously, it's caused a lot of derision in the UK, particularly because of, you know, the conference is associated with a sort of low rent non league football. So there's been lots of Vauxhall and Vanarama gifts going around. I'm not sure anyone really wanted this. UEFA say it will help more clubs from different countries participate in European football. I wrote an article about it yesterday. I sort of had a bit of a think about it, and I think it's mainly just a sop, say, to smaller clubs, and it's going to intensify the stranglehold the European elite already have on the Champions League, because it will harm the chances of other teams, say middle-ranking teams like Wolves or Leicester or Everton, whoever, of harm their chances of breaking through the glass ceiling and qualifying for European football.
And it will be the Carabao Cup winners who go into this.
Yeah, the details have yet to be finalised, but the Carabao Cup winners will go into it unless the Carabao Cup winners go on to qualify for a more prestigious competition by alternative means. I think, because Man City won the domestic treble last season, I'm guessing Everton would have qualified.
So
they finished in eighth place last season. I think that would have got them into it.
So essentially this is devaluing the Carabao Cup a bit, right? Because if you can anymore, right? Because they've gone into the UEFA Cup previously, right? Or the Europa League,
yes,
sorry.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So we don't know what's going to happen to that place.
Right.
This could also have quite serious ramifications for teams in Scotland, because Scotland in the UEFA coefficient ranking, I'll try and keep this as interesting as is possible.
Coefficient.
it will be difficult.
People turn the amp up to 11 for coefficient chat, don't they?
Scotland's coefficient is currently, they're 19th in the rankings. Only teams with a ranking of 15th or better will be able to get into the Europa League. This all starts in 2021, by the way. So unless Scotland improved their coefficient, as things stand, they would have one team going into the Champions League qualifiers and then three more going into this new competition, no one in the Europa League. But if they do improve their coefficient in the time available, they could have as many as 5 teams in Europe. So.
Right. Will it get to the stage where every team is in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at it from a non-British perspective, it's an attempt to get smaller nations, more European competition and more exposure.
But
I mean, the big 5 leagues, so France, Germany, Spain, Italy, England, they only get 1 place each in this competition. Okay. Smaller nations get 2 or 3.
But in the same way that, annoyingly, teams who do badly in the Champions League go into the Europa League, people who do badly in the Europa League go into this conference, right?
Yes.
I mean, that is just so dumb, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you get knocked out of a competition, you get knocked out of a competition. You should not be allowed to... I don't think any football fan thinks that is a good thing. And I don't know how many Champions League sides
well,
like...
Well, I think you could conceivably have the last 8 teams in it all having come from the Europa League.
Which makes a total mockery of the conference.
Yeah, but I presume in the same way at the moment, you could conceivably have the last 8 teams in the Europa League coming from the Champions League.
Yeah,
so
you could.
It's ludicrous.
Anyway, well...
But it will keep the elite, the richest teams happy, because it will damage and harm other teams.
And these games are going to be on Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday night.
That's my biggest gripe. The Thursday night is for watching, you know, Astana in the Europa League. You can, if they should put the Lithuanian games on the Wednesday. So you can have... Oh, no, Friday.
You want that on a Friday?
So you have Champions League Tuesday, God. Wednesday. Monday night football, Champions League Tuesday, Wednesday, Europa League, Europa Conference, back to the Premier League, and you've got 7 days of football then.
Yeah.
Don't you want one day off?
Never.
I refuse to watch Europa League group stages, and I certainly
not going to football overload on Thursday. It's like
I can't handle it. I have to have Thursdays off.
Why do you think teams? It does seem Thursday Sunday is harder than Wednesday Saturday for teams. They just don't seem to be able to cope. There's no reason why that should be the case. I don't know if I've invented that stat, but certainly in my mind. Teams struggle with that more. It seems like a shorter break.
Yeah, it might be. It might also be that the clubs that are in the Europa League have smaller squads or squads that are less built to rotate that competition.
Is it also because psychologically, is it like when I have a day off on a sort of Wednesday, I don't feel like it's a weekend day, you know? I can't psychologically just do nothing. I feel I should be active with myself. So I don't... Because I'm working Saturdays and Sundays, I don't really feel like I have any days off, is it?
And also if you come back on the Friday, then you're sort of, whether you're part of it or not, you'll be conscious of the whole Premier League carnival going on.
Worth thinking about, UEFA. More UEFA news. They announced on Monday that Slovakia and Hungary have both been sanctioned for racist behaviour, which happened in a game between the teams earlier this month in Budapest. Both of them were fined and told to play their next home game behind closed doors. That was not good news for Wales fans because 2,137 of them had already bought tickets, sorted out their transport and accommodation. 2 days after the announcement, UEFA announced that Slovakia were the host of the 2022 under-19 Euros. Then it emerged that Slovakia were looking at exploiting a loophole, which meant they could fill the ground, which is a 20,000 capacity, with 18,000 schoolchildren and some chaperones, effectively filling it with quite a screechy home team support at the expense of Wales fans. This morning, as we've been recorded, it's been announced that Slovakia have successfully appealed their stadium closure, which is good news for Wales fans. But, I mean, I don't know what it says about UEFA's attitude to stamping out racism. Clearly, it's ridiculous to make a game closed doors that's so soon in advance, right, that people have already bought their tickets. But you can still do that ban and say it's for a game where people haven't booked their accommodation.
Yeah. And is a closed door game a much of a ban? Any, you know,
it's, I mean, financial, I guess, isn't it?
I guess. I don't know. I think kicking Peter, it's time to kick people out of competitions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Romania have been sanctioned for pitch invasions, setting off fireworks, throwing objects, and racist behaviour by their supporters, including offensive banners and chants. They were given an €83,000 fine ordered to play their next two home games behind closed doors, but one of them suspended for a year. Breaking news, the Spanish Federation has sanctioned Barcelona for tapping up Antoine Griezmann. Producer Jonathan has written they've been fined €300. I presume it's more than... You're serious? Their fine is €300. That's brilliant. Just got a cash point. It's amazing, isn't it?
I have a £250 limit.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's about €300, isn't it?
No, it's when not you, anymore. It's not.
When do you go to a cash point? How much do you take out?
Generally £100.
Paul?
I was felt embarrassed. I was going to reveal that I was taking out too much money. But after that, I'm quite happy to say £30.
You're a £30er, yeah. Marcus?
I hardly use cash.
I don't know what cash point is.
Tip, tap, tap.
Yeah.
I'm probably a 200 man.
What?
Really? Wow.
But it's very rare. I mean, it's probably on a monthly basis, right?
Right. Which cash point do you usually go to?
Keeps you going.
Tell a couple of friends of mine to be on the lookout.
Are you going
to
mug me?
Mug you off.
Marco Steen says, thank you to Mr. Sleepy who sent this my way. Dear Leeds fans, Anthony Yeboah's son, Kelvin, just scored 4 goals against my hometown club, Austria Vienna. He's only 19 years old. His father was in the stands. So look out for Kelvin Yeboah. Jimmy says, give us some pod history. Who started the pod and who were on the first panel? Barry?
Sean Ingle invented the pod.
Okay, back in what year?
The year the World Cup was in Germany.
2006.
Mm-hmm. The first panel was me, Sean, possibly Scott Murray, and I'm going to guess maybe Rob Smythe, but I couldn't tell you for definite. It was definitely me and Sean Ingle.
With James as the host.
James is the host, yeah.
Okay. Grant says, to finish, I'm not sure why he asked us this, but, you know, that's what we're here for. What are some fun and interesting alternatives to war that countries could settle their differences with?
Rock, paper, scissors.
It's quick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's more fun than war?
I prefer...
a nice bath. Actually, no. I think I'd rather be at war than have a bath.
Well, hang on. You do shower, though, because
I do shower every day.
You shower every day. You don't wash your hair. You do wet your hair.
I have started to wash my hair.
Really?
On a weekly basis.
Oh, wow.
I've been shamed into it. Yeah.
How are you finding it?
I don't like it.
Why not?
Well, because I do it so rarely, it really hurts my upper arms. I start to get achy. Like, you know, it's like
how
I'm doing
much pressure
weights
are you putting on your? How much, you know?
Well, you have to get all the shampoo out, you know, and all the conditioner.
If you just stand under the shower, just a little gentle. Does it hurt your arm just to put your hands on your head? Is that?
Well, no, it's putting my arms up and then, you know, doing lots of rubbing and.
Okay.
Yeah, it gets tiring up above the sort of, I don't know what muscles there.
I don't know if you have them, Barry, to be perfectly honest. So hopefully that answers your question, Grant, and that'll do for today. Marcus, thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.